Welcome back to In the Moment, and it's time for our regular Friday feature of Tech Radio, and we have a full table today for our conversation. Amos Aesop is Chief Information Security Officer at X-Agent Solutions in Sioux Falls. Amos, thanks for being here.
Hey, thanks for having me again.
John T. Meyer, co-founder and CEO of Lemonly in Sioux Falls, thank you as well for being here.
Yeah, you bet. Hi, Kara.
Hi. Jeff Litterick, network engineer with the Bureau of Information and Technology, joins us from Pierre. Hi, Jeff.
Hello, all.
Kent Osborne, SDPB's director of digital, is with us as well.
Hi, Kara.
Hi, Kent. And Heather Benson, social media manager at SDPB, also joining us at the table today.
Hi, Thanks Heather. Thanks for having me, Kara.
So in our abbreviated version, let's get to some of the topics. Kent, you started us off with the idea, will the pandemic finally kill cable TV?
Well, it could. Certainly, it's got a lot of folks on the ropes financially, and they are discovering that other sources of entertainment are available, and goes into the binge watching of their favorite programs, or discovering programs that they didn't know were their favorites on a lot of different channels. I don't know if you've noticed, but you almost need a scorecard anymore to find out where to find certain things. You know, as rights expire one place, they get bought by another, and it's really kind of a bouncing game, but it is that we looked at some pretty stark numbers as far as subscription rates and things for cable TV. They lost 1.7 million paying subscribers recently, and it really paints a grim picture for a lot of folks. You know, AT&T took a massive 3.6 million video customers hit last year, and it just, you know, it things just keep spiraling downwards for cable TV.
Well, and people are taking the time now, I think, while they're home, to figure out how to use some technology and how to use all those gadgets that they have that they've never really maybe taken the time to learn before.
Well, one thing people are moving to is video games. They are just going bonkers. Everybody's out of stock of games and consoles, especially the Nintendo Switch. Video game revenue is like up massive. I mean, all the video game companies is where all the money's going to in the entertainment right now, it seems like. And little anecdotal, this week, a 10-year-old game became free on the Epic Game Store called Grand Theft Auto 5, and it took down and overloaded a massive video game store for over 8 hours with people trying to get in to get it. So video games are spiking massively. So that's one of the places where people are starting to move to, it seems like, being all cooped up. So.
And Kent, you were going to say?
Oh, I was just going to mention Netflix picked up more than 15 million subscribers in the first quarter of this year. So people are finding those. Your question was are they firing up these devices? Maybe they've had a Roku hooked up, or a Fire Stick, or an Apple TV. Are they starting to pick up those technologies or stream from their phones? I think the answer is yes. You mentioned, are they getting bored and they're playing around a little bit more? I think maybe that's a little bit to do with it. Did they discover that they can do without a larger bill? I don't know. But that seems to be the trend that people are seeing.
Well, then I think the joke of the death of the cable bundle is it's just a matter of time until we have like the online streaming bundle, right? I mean, we're all there anyway. Where you're paying over here for Netflix and over there for Hulu, and right now you get Disney Plus for free because you have a Verizon phone plan. And so the idea that we're slowly just like going back to the bundle, just on a different platform, is an idea that I've seen that I think is funny. And just exactly right on the gaming. I think one thing, maybe people, most of our age, on those of us on the panel, played video games as like a console growing up, just you in your living room with the television. You know, now these video games are social networks in their own way. People play with their friends. When school's been out, kids play with their friends. And then, of course, people they don't even know online playing video games. It's more than just the game. It becomes socialization.
Yeah, I will tell you, one of my daughters got married last summer, and one of her guests was somebody her fiancé had never met but had been gaming with for years and felt like he should invite him to the wedding. So they actually met for the first time. This group of friends at the wedding, which was...
Another anecdote to go along with Jeff's is there's a game called Age of Empires, and it's been around for almost 21 years or so, and it's having its best year ever because of the lockdown. People are going back and playing that game or discovering it for the first time, and it's and people are just going nuts. It's an interesting trend to see.
Is there a security risk with these online gamings, scams and such?
Well, there's always risks with scams.
Yeah, there's always risks with scams and stuff. But most games are patched regularly, especially any online game. And because they are big targets of fraud, especially like World of Warcraft, a lot of them do two-factor and other stuff. They're pretty secure. In fact, usually more secure than many other apps is because they are used by millions of people and any security issues get found out fairly quickly and patched fairly quickly. So there's always a risk, though. You can always be scammed, right? You know, other human beings in the game may not always tell you the truth when you're talking to them, right? So you do have to be aware of that, just like any online experience on social media or anything else, right? So you do have to follow those same rules.
John T. Meyer, I am told that you want to talk a little bit about Tesla.
Oh, yeah, sure. So big week for in the news for Tesla. Elon Musk has been a little bit all over the map on Twitter. He and his girlfriend had a son, which they named, I'm not even going to try to attempt, but a combination of letters and symbols. And on top of all that, he was very public and very outright in his feelings about getting back to work for their largest, I guess you could probably call their headquarters, but their largest production facility is in California. And with COVID-19 shutdown, haven't been able to go to work. And he was threatening on Twitter that he was going to, one, just go to work anyway, regardless. And he would be the first to be let to line up and go to jail if that's what it would take. But even threatened to relocate and was kind of saying maybe we'll move to Texas or we'll move our production facility elsewhere. So interesting week for Tesla. They actually started with a really good first quarter. They were, you know, Elon's never been afraid of big, bold proclamations. And sometimes they haven't hit them in the past, but they've been hitting these targets and goals. So it'll be interesting to see how, you know, COVID slows that down. So yeah, I think what I'm learning is Elon Musk is really a master of public relations and the way he uses Twitter. He can manipulate and move a lot of the public opinion.
And is it working?
It does help that about every other state in the union would love for Tesla to move their headquarters to their state. So gives them a lot of leverage. And
I think 10,000 jobs at that facility. So that's a lot of jobs.
Which brings up the topic of getting back to work, and let's talk a little bit about some of the technology challenges of moving people back into the office. Amos, do you have any thoughts?
Or
John?
Oh, yeah, go ahead, Amos.
Sure. Well, so, you know, the thing that we've been hearing a lot lately is that the longer this goes on and the more people are finding the ability to accomplish the everyday and routine kind of tasks and the more comfortable they become with it, the more likely it is that some of those employees are going to want to continue to do this in a comfortable environment working from home. A lot of employees or a lot of employers who previously felt that they weren't a good a candidate for having many workers from home are finding that there are ways to do things. Technology is providing the, whether it's communication or, you know, through video or through email or other means, they're finding that it's working better than they might have guessed it would, say, you know, five or six months ago. And so what we're actually hearing is that there is going to be less of a return or a slower return to normal, even when the all clear is given, because people are finding that this is working for them. They're productive. They're able to get things done that they didn't think they could before, and people are enjoying being away from the office. Now, that being said, there's certainly something to be said for you know, human interaction and being able to go into the office when you'd like to. But we're just seeing that maybe there won't be quite as quick a return as there was the exodus.
Do you think there's really going to be an all clear given, or do you think it's going to be a slow phasing back?
Well, you know, from that standpoint, there certainly is arguments on both sides of that. And I don't know, you know, the question keeps being asked on almost every conference call that I'm on, you know, when are we going to get back to normal, or is this the new normal, et cetera. I don't have an answer for that. I think that there probably will be a time where individual companies will say, now is your opportunity to begin the rollback or to start coming back into the office. It seems to me that just as though the states are providing the individual decisions on when they're going to start easing restrictions, then within those states, companies will follow suit as well. And I suspect that there will be companies who hold out for a longer period of time, and there will be companies who are quick to jump on the return to normalcy. So I think
definitely this week in the tech world, we saw, so Google and Facebook both said you can stay remote for the rest of 2020 to provide some clarity there. And then Jack Dorsey, CEO of Twitter, came out and said, you may be remote forever, indefinitely, if you would like to. And so, you know, it's a different game probably in San Francisco than here in South Dakota. They have really high expensive cost of real estate and rent. They also, you know, ridiculous perks and benefits from food and snacks and oil changes and all this stuff. So there's a big cost savings for those companies, to the point where I think you're going to see some exodus from, say, Silicon Valley, some employees who can make a Silicon Valley technology salary, but maybe want to live somewhere else, maybe South Dakota.
Yeah, I'm seeing this more and more where after, even when everything's returned to normal, there's going to be more and more remote workers just because people have found out that it can work very well for a lot more people than people thought. But one thing to also keep in mind is most of the companies, unless they're very small, will actually probably do a staged return to normal. Kind of like what state governments do, it in that you just can't bring everybody back into the office all at once and say, hey, we're back to normal. Even on the technology side, those devices have been off the network, off management for a very long time. They all have to be staged back in, patched up. There's a whole complex process that each company will have to go through to bring the people back in, cleaning products, all that kind of stuff. So I would imagine even when people start coming back, it may take weeks for the company to go from, hey, we're returning to normal before they're back to normal. So unless they're a very small company, it's going to be a process that it may take weeks in that process too. So,
okay, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll have more topics about tech radio and the computer guys. Stay with us. This is In the Moment. Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Kara Hetland, and so we're going to call this part of our conversation, It Took a Pandemic. So, Kent, we have a listener question before we get to It Took a Pandemic. So go ahead and bring that in.
Non-pandemic related at first here, but the question is, hi, hope you have time to talk about Microsoft Edge versus Internet Explorer.
Oh.
We use IE at work, and it's been locking up nearly every time when opening attachments like Adobe PDF, PNGs, GIFs, have multiple tabs open. Would it be better to switch to Edge? Thanks, tech guys. The emphatic answer is yes. You should have done this by now. And Jeff, when was the date that Microsoft was just going to go ahead and remove the IE option on for most people? Isn't that coming up here?
Yeah, and they've discontinued our support for IE. And what they want to point out is there's two versions of Edge now that we should differentiate a little bit between also. But Microsoft IE is dead. If you're still using IE, pretty soon you're not going to get it. You're not going to be able to install it. You're not going to be able to use it. Microsoft's killing it. They've been trying to kill it for now over 5-6 years. And in the next versions of Windows 10 and stuff, IE will be gone. Now, when you mention Edge, this says in that fire, there's two now versions of Edge. This is their original Edge, which Microsoft is now starting to kill off. And there's a new version of Edge that's based off of Chrome. And if you ever install like Windows 10 or anything on a new machine, you'll be immediately prompted to upgrade to the new Chromium Edge, which is based off Chrome. Microsoft's future is the Chromium Edge. So I wouldn't even bother trying to run the original Edge anymore. I would follow Microsoft's recommendations, immediately upgrade to the Chrome Edge. That is Microsoft's goal, and that will be the one to future-proof you. IE is only been kept around for app compatibility that requires it going to apps that were developed back 20 years ago. So unless you have one of those, there is no reason to run IE for anything at this point. You should be running Chrome, Firefox, or Chromium Edge for all, everything. So
there you go, Kara.
Okay, thank you.
Here's your answer.
All right, it took a pandemic. Heather Benson, you're first.
Well, it took a pandemic for almost every house of worship in our country and our world, to be quite honest, to take the leap into providing a virtual option. I attend a very, very, very small, very rural church, and we're seeing more engagement and interaction being able to provide a virtual Facebook Live service, and the amount of different houses of worship, when we're talking Christian, Muslim, Hindu, synagogues, everyone's hopping online to make that interaction. And it's for both congregations and the public and different religions, it's been game-changing, that interaction. And it took a pandemic before most of these places, especially small places, were willing to make that big leap.
All Facebook Live kind of events or web-based?
Well, I think everyone's taking a different approach depending on what their tech is available. Facebook Live has been really popular because it's easy. If you have a mobile device, you point and shoot and you hit live, and at 9:30 on Sunday morning, you're live. That brings its own limitations. Facebook has some pretty significant issues servicing the amount of live feeds they've had firing up. They've had issues up and down the food chain from big organizations to small. But people are going on YouTube Live. People are recording it and posting it on their website later. But people are, whatever they're doing, finding a way to bring worship, bring Bible studies, bring church coffee time to a virtual audience that's expanding that audience in many cases.
Which is leaving many to wonder if they actually need to go back and worship.
Well,
in
I
person.
Think I think we're going to see, I mean, we've already seen that the shift in people's willingness to use video conferencing and video chat, even within, you know, a family unit. I think that's going to become part of life going forward, that you have family video chat even after COVID, because it's a way for our far-flung people to get together. I think going forward, we're going to see, I know in our church, we're planning to do this long-term, because the more you can make certain things available, you're there to bring a benefit to as many people as possible. And it's one way to do that.
Kent, it took a pandemic too.
Can I just throw in on the last topic real quick?
Yeah.
with the church. You asked the question, is it even necessary to go back to those houses of worship? And that's a really personal question for, I think, a lot of people.
Yes.
As I've been helping my church, which is just across the street, it's the pastor and I recording. We pre-record and launch it live, you know, on everything on Sunday morning. But our service right now is in the can for Sunday. And we prefer it that way. It's easier and you don't run into these live problems and disappoint a whole bunch of people waiting if you keep having technical problems on Sunday morning. But as I sit there in an empty sanctuary, mm-hmm. and think of where those Christmas trees are supposed to be at Christmas time. And we just had a quilting for the seniors. And I thought back to my three kids and that ceremony. And, you know, you just start thinking of all those memories in that place. And mm-hmm. so for some, I think it's, you know, some people want to yearn to get back. They need to get back to that actual coffee hour where you're with people. And that's a part of a part of the whole package, on a Sunday morning. It really is. But anyway, I don't want to take that too long, but when I kind of coined the term, it took a pandemic in my head. It was working with a state agency that had streaming for the public, on the back burner for many years, maybe even a decade. Because of either funding or lack of really wanting to take on a new challenger, whatever reason, things got backburnered. They always knew they wanted to do it, but never got pushed over the edge. And it took a pandemic to push some people over the edge to get projects rolling.
Okay. Well, some people, I want to say, tend to, why change if it's working the way it is just fine? Why embrace technology? So I'm going to add to the list, and Amos and John and Jeff jump in here too. It took a pandemic even for my own staff to embrace the technology that has been in front of them for quite a while. So Amos, how about you? It took a pandemic to...
It took a pandemic to increase the comfortable... The comfort levels of people to use telemedicine. My neighbor is actually a genetic counselor, and he and I have had a couple of conversations about how things are going over the course of the last 3 months, and he said that while the technology has always been there for him and his patients to have remote conversations, to be able to deal with things electronically, there was always a comfort level of coming into the office. It's what people know, using technology to do things in a new way is always a little bit scary because you don't know if it's going to work, you don't know if you're going to be pressing the right buttons, et cetera. And this kind of forced the issue. And so it took a pandemic to force that telemedicine issue, which he believes is going to make things so much easier going down the road in the future from here on out, because now that people are comfortable with it, they're going to continue to stick with it and reuse it even when it's not a medical necessity.
John T. Meyer, it took a pandemic too?
Yeah, it's a great question. I'll say it took a pandemic to give myself permission to really kind of customize my daily work schedule. A lot of it out of necessity, having two little girls at home. And, you know, in many ways, as CEO of a company, I am entirely in control of my schedule. But, you know, as a leader, I always felt very obligated to be in the office, to be present, to be available, to be there to help, to answer questions. And as we at Lemonly, you know, we already did remote work, but now we're 100% remote. And for the foreseeable future, I've gone for a run in the middle of the day, taken my girls, on errands and really just adjusted my schedule. Some of it has been a nuisance, but you know, overall it's been a little freeing to give yourself some, you know, permission to kind of have this new work-life balance. So yeah, the pandemic helped in that way.
Jeff Litterick, it took a pandemic too?
Kind of took a pandemic for a lot of people to embrace video conferencing as it is. we've been talking a lot about Zoom and Teams and other stuff, and because everyone's working remotely now and they're kind of forced into using it. But these technologies have been out for quite a long time. Google Hangouts goes back 10, 12 years. I mean, cameras go back that far. It was always available to everybody to use, but people, you know, shied away from it and stuff. And the use of it also brings on the remote work is people still need to be in human contact. You can't do everything in isolation. You still need to reach out and talk and listen and see other people and your coworkers and stuff. And this is a good way to kind of do it, even a little bit in the office before, just before the pandemic. We were setting up meetings and just doing this just to work on projects together, because it was easier than trying to get into a conference room or anything like that. So even in the office, this stuff is great to reach out, just pop up a video call to a colleague, work on a project together, stuff like that, instead of having to physically set up a conference room or anything like that. So this technology is only going to get better and better and bigger. It just was not very embraced very much before this, and I think it's going to be super embraced afterwards.
Okay, Heather Benson, in the just a couple minutes we have left, memes as a comfort tool and our younger generation really embracing social media as a time to connect and find comfort.
Well, I think it's been really interesting for me watching different generations interact with memes and other means of conveying emotion, you know, emojis that I didn't see 6 months ago. I think as we've had to, when, you know, you have a mask on your face or you're in a video call or you're over the phone and you're texting or Facebooking someone, we still have that very human need to convey our emotions and connect. And I think we all use humor as a stress reliever. And they just did a survey showing that for especially the youngest generation, the people 18 to 24, that's been one of their most comforting, being able to share those emotions, those feelings, that humor over memes. And I, in my world, I've seen that happen in generations. You know, I have 70-something-year-old uncles who are sending memes that I never would have expected to see. But it's interesting how we talk about using technology. It took a pandemic to see my 72-year-old uncle start sending emojis. But it's that way to share, and it's sharing, you know, the way we can, which is digitally right now.
Right. And it's a way to react without, you know, figuring out if you don't have a comment, you can at least react and acknowledge something, right?
Yep. Yeah, we in a human-to-human interaction, we have that ability to nod or smile or, you know, give someone else that feedback that I heard you, I feel you, I know what you're trying to say. And it's they're emojis, they're emoticons. They're there to, you know, memes are, all those things are there to help with that level of communication that we normally get from each other's faces.
All right. I want to thank everybody. I'm giving a thumbs up all around from here. So I want to thank everybody for taking time and coming on the program today. Heather Benson, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And Kent Osborne, SDPB's Director of Digital, thanks for being here. Jeff Litterick, Network Engineer for the Bureau of Information and Technology, thank you as well. And John T. Meyer and Amos Asap, thank you both for your time today as well.
Good, thank you.
That'll do it for In the Moment today. Thank you for listening. We hope it served you, and have a great weekend.